Blog Talk Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity. All the...
Harry had a little lamb. It was quite a snow. And everywhere that Harry went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool. Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
And it's Reese on the Radio, 1 minute after the hour, right here on blogtalkradio.com. On this, your May 17th, 2012, it's a Thursday. And, oh, I am a buzz. I am a buzz. I am definitely a buzz today. Plenty of rhetoric coming out of Reese on the Radio today. Plenty of rhetoric coming from Reese on the Radio today on two major stories. We are going to spend an hour apiece on both of those stories. And we'll bring in some other stuff as well. We might. But I don't know which way to go. To be honest with you, there's one story I really, really want to get into. And then there's another story that just rehashes most of yesterday's story. And yesterday's story was about, of course, the Trayvon Martin case. And I told you we were going to be on top of it no matter what. We were going to be following this case. I think one of the guys suggested, I remember who it was, but I think it was maybe, it may have been JC, that we need to write a book on the Trayvon Martin case because we've covered this thing backwards, forwards, left, right, up, down, north, south, east, west. We've done it all here. We even had some crackpot. Trying to get rid of the stand your ground law on the show. Now, I've been following this story, as has JC the producer, as Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery, has. Mary's been in and out on it. She had more to do with that whole debacle we went through with the Black Panther Party, the new Black Panther Party. But they're out of the picture now. They're done. They're done. They're quiet. They're like church mouses now. They've shut their mouths as quiet as they could possibly shut their mouths. Shut your damn mouth. They shut their mouths. Because now they've got nothing. But that's fine. I guess we have to go into Trayvon Martin. Because this is big. Oh, this is big. New evidence has just been released. Hundreds of pages of evidence. Hundreds of pages of evidence has been revealed. Oh, and some audio tapes, too. We'll play that. We'll play some audio tapes. We got to play them. So we'll get to that. But, you know, we're going to get to all of it. Let's just get down to brass tacks here. Okay?
Brass tacks?
Yes.
Have we paid homage today already?
No, that's not happening until later. If you want to upload some of that bronze music, you go right ahead.
Don't you dare.
Yeah.
We got a double shot, you know.
What's a double shot?
Chuck Brown.
I'm not feeling him.
You gotta be kidding me.
I'm not feeling him. I don't like go-go music. I'm not feeling
That's
him.
That's your neighborhood.
I could care less. I already had an argument with a guy today about that. I told him, I said, I personally don't give two damns about that go-go music.
You did not shake your ass in the late 70s and early 80s to Bustin' Loose.
I don't know that song.
You gotta know it.
Okay, you may have heard it, but
you
I
know
wasn't.
Why? I'm going to tell you why you heard it. You thought it was Rick James.
Bustin' Loose. Is that the song?
Yeah.
I don't care about that. Let me get back to Trayvon.
Trayvon.
I got to get
you
back
better
to
not, you. Better not force feed our audience, your audience, with no mess.
I'm not force feeding anything.
Okay.
Come on, JC. You don't know the new evidence that came out today?
I didn't see the new evidence. I didn't hear about the new evidence. I had a whole lot going on in my personal life.
Okay.
New evidence in my own personal life. And but you better believe I'm going to analyze everything you say.
Oh, good. Then I'm glad that you're doing it, my friend.
And I'm going to pick it apart like I did yesterday.
Well, good. Fine. Now, you remember what I said yesterday. Let me go into my monologue.
Okay. Go ahead, finish. I'm sorry for interrupting.
Let me go to my monologue about Trayvon Martin. Now, as we played yesterday, I asked you guys to critique the reporting by Matt Gutman, who has been literally the senior reporter at ABC News on this case. And I told you that Matt Gutman, who tweeted on his Twitter account, at Matt Gutman, that Trayvon Martin, that George Zimmerman killed Trayvon Martin because he was black, that he already had a biased approach to this story. Well, I'm going to show you clearly how evident that is. If you don't believe me, let's go back to yesterday's show. Now I'm going to go to ABC News. I titled it ABC News Reports on New Zimmerman Evidence, 1 minute 51 seconds. This is what it reported, and I told you guys what it was that was wrong with the reporting. And I said, he's bringing in these analysts to talk about how George Zimmerman didn't look dizzy, needed to see a psychiatrist, and all this other ridiculous stuff to bring it up. But I'll let you listen to it yourself. This is bias reporting at its best, and I want you to hear this. Oh, Mike from Florida. Oh, he just called it. Mike, I got you, buddy. I got you. Look, we're just going to, right now, let me just make this point before I say anything. Mike from Florida, He is our He's our friendly contributor. He's our friendly neighborhood contributor and an avid listener of Reese on the Radio. So I respect this man. Probably because he agrees with me more than anything. But I still love him. Mike, I love you. So thank you as always for tuning in. So let's go into yesterday, ABC News, Matt Gutman reporting on the new evidence. And then, as he tries to ambiguously disprove it by bringing in a specialist.
Tonight, for the very first time, a medical report exclusively obtained by ABC News is revealing the full extent of George Zimmerman's injuries after his deadly confrontation with Trayvon Martin. A broken nose, two black eyes, gashes on the back of his head. All this from the doctor who treated Zimmerman the morning after the shooting.
There's no question these documented injuries help Zimmerman's case, but the fundamental legal question remains, who was the aggressor?
Zimmerman claims that Martin attacked him that night and that he only shot the unarmed 17-year-old because he feared for his own life as Martin bashed his head into the concrete. Zimmerman is charged with second-degree murder. He has pleaded not guilty and insists he acted in self-defense. The report also reveals new details about Zimmerman's state of mind the morning after the shooting. Zimmerman telling his doctor he suffered from nausea when thinking about what happened. His doctor writes that it's imperative that Zimmerman see his psychologist. But questions remain. Zimmerman declined to go to the hospital the night of the shooting, and video of him in the Sanford police station less than an hour after the shooting shows no visible evidence of blood on his shirt and jacket. And he seems steady on his feet. We asked emergency physician Vidor Friedman to analyze this enhanced video of Zimmerman barely an hour after the the shooting.
If he had a significant abrasion, I think we'd see that on this film. I don't see anything.
But at the trial, all of this could come down to who instigated the fight.
If George Zimmerman started the altercation, and then he's losing the fight and fears for his life, he does not have the legal right at that point to use deadly force.
Zimmerman is still in hiding. He's living off the $200,000.
Okay, that's unnecessary. Yes, he's getting $1,000 a day for his defense because people believe it. Of course, Matt Gutman, he only just wants you to know that, you know, there are people out there, bad people, who are giving him $1,000 a day, those evil sons of bitches. They believe in it. Doesn't that make you mad? And I can read through the lines because I know better. I know better. I do this media thing. I am an untrained official media critic. That's right. I learned this on my own. There is no degree for what I've learned. Because the learning never stops. I stole that. Anyway, point is, that's Matt Gutman yesterday. Now listen to what Matt Gutman says today. Because now they have legal documents that came directly from the prosecutor that has been given to the media. Listen to this report, and I'm not even going to tell you what he left out, because NBC News does it for me. Here's today's report by Matt Gutman.
Tonight, a trove of never-before-seen evidence collected by police that fateful night. Here, clear pictures of George Zimmerman taken at the police station just hours after he shot Trayvon Martin. You can see what appears to be a swollen nose, the back of his head cut and bleeding. And in this newly released document, an officer on the scene notes Zimmerman's nose appeared to be broken. And look at this grainy photo, taken as Zimmerman was sitting in the police car just moments after the shooting. There, too, his nose seems swollen. A doctor report first obtained by ABC News reveals it was broken. Also released tonight, a chilling image of the gun Zimmerman used to kill the unarmed Trayvon Martin. Today's documents show a police officer called the shooting, quote, avoidable, had Zimmerman, quote, remained in his vehicle and awaited the arrival of law enforcement.
Are you following us?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
It's one reason, a source tells ABC News, police doubted Zimmerman's claim of self-defense that night and filed this recommendation for his arrest. What remains a black hole here is what triggered that conflict between Trayvon Martin and Zimmerman that night. Of course, that will be much debated in the courtroom behind me when this trial finally gets underway. Diane.
As he said, poring over this new evidence, Matt Gutman thanks Matt.
So now, if you're really paying attention to what Matt Gutman did here, was he talked about all of this other evidence, and then he goes on to say, of course, that, you know, we'll never know. That'll all be debated behind us, you know, behind me at this courtroom. You know, it appears to be swollen. You got to see the picture, by the way, of George Zimmerman in the police car, the grainy photo. His nose, he could be Bozo the Clown. This nose is so big. And the blood is trickling down onto his mouth. Now remember, we're talking about a guy who keeps using the words documents exclusively obtained by ABC News. That's the words Matt Gutman is using. He's the one who's had all the video, all of the documents that had been exclusively obtained by ABC News. And then I turn over to NBC. And trust me when I tell you that Matt Gutman has this information. Has this information that NBC News reported today that I'm about to play for you if you didn't hear it. But Matt Gutman never reports it. And when I tell you it's shocking, oh my God.
We're getting our first look at never-before-seen photographs of defendant George Zimmerman taken at the jail after he was taken into custody the night of the fatal shooting. We're also getting a chance to look at some photographs of the crime scene where the Neighborhood Watch volunteer shot the unarmed teenager. That was on February 26th. George Zimmerman has claimed self-defense. And there is this photo of the weapon that George Zimmerman had with him that night. It is a 9mm Caltech pistol. Now, there are also audio recordings with witnesses, and there are long interviews with witnesses where the verbatims are played out. And in one of them, one investigator reported to his interview with Trayvon Martin's father, which was also taken on February 28th. I asked Mr. Martin if the voice calling for help was that of his son. Mr. Martin, who, according to the interviewer, was clearly emotional, impacted by the recording, quietly responded, no. That's in sharp contrast to what Trayvon Martin's mother has said, saying that indeed those screams for help were her son. And in another document, a witness told police that the screams were coming from George Zimmerman and that Trayvon Martin was throwing punches MMA style. That's mixed martial arts. Now, included in the release of all of these documents in the medical examiner's report is the toxicology tests, which show that Trayvon Martin had THC in his blood. That's marijuana. Brian?
All right. Kerry Sanders, Sanford, Florida, starting us off tonight. Thanks.
Trayvon Martin's dad listened to the audio of someone screaming and quietly said, no, that's not my son's voice. It's what he said to the police. A complete contrast to what his mother said. Oh, and that witness who said that Trayvon Martin was beating down George Zimmerman MMA style, I got him too.
There was a black man with a black hoodie on top of either a white guy, or now that I found out, I think it was an Hispanic guy with a red sweatshirt on the ground, yelling out help. And then, you know, I tried to tell him, you know, get out of here, you know, stop or whatever. And then the one guy on top in the black hoodie was pretty much just throwing down blows on the guy, kind of MMA style.
Ground and pound, okay.
Yeah, like a ground and pound on the concrete at this point. So at this point, I told him I was calling 911. I locked my door, went inside, heard a pop, never heard a gunshot before, so I didn't know if it was a rock or something like that. We ran upstairs. As soon as I got upstairs, I looked down below, and then I saw the guy in the black hoodie pretty much just laid out on the ground.
Laid out on the ground. Said that he saw Trayvon pounding on an MMA style. THC in his system. That is marijuana, folks. He wasn't taking some supplement. Marijuana. Let's go back to the audio tape.
Central Police Department, line is being recorded. Sean.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. It's Retrieview Circle. The best address I can give you is 111 Retrieview Circle. This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining, and he's just walking around looking about.
Okay.
He looks like he's on drugs or something. He's walking around looking about. George Zimmerman profiled him? THC in his system? Go ahead. I'll let you guys go. Come on. Go nuts. Come on, guys. Go nuts.
If you don't cut that load of crap out,
hey,
you've got to be kidding me.
No. Wait,
you
wait,
made
wait.
That sound, hold on. You made that sound so compelling and George Zimmerman's favor. THC, marijuana stays in your system for at least 30 days. At least.
Thank you. So what? He's a pothead.
No. Who says he has to smoke it every single day?
Again,
and as far as Mike from Florida, yeah, he I guess because he's there, he kind of has firsthand knowledge of what that law is. But obviously, he's not that accurate because right now, every imaginable legal analyst that's analyzing this brings it back to who was the aggressor.
I understand that, but again, I'm going right back to Matt.
Therefore, standing your ground doesn't apply in this case. Or it's not going
pounding,
to, I would hope and believe.
Wait. If the witness says that Trayvon Martin was pounding on him mixed martial
arts
style.
That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
Whoa.
He wasn't the aggressor.
Mixed martial arts style. Really?
It doesn't, listen.
That's a pretty aggressive sport.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. But it all boils down to who's the aggressor.
Whoa.
How many times, Reese, how many times have you seen chihuahuas run to fence in the yard and bark at a bull mastiff?
You're grasping at straws.
I'm grasping at straws.
You're the one who's grasping at straws because, once again, all right, let's go with the witness. The witness, all he can say is he saw one instance in the fight where George Zimmerman was losing, all right? He can't say anything to who instigated the fight. If George Zimmerman threw the first punch, no. He only saw the last part, and not even the whole last part.
I don't even understand what it is that you're trying to say here. I understand.
He saw a tiny sliver. He saw one tiny little piece in a puzzle, and although it may be a significant piece of the puzzle, but if he has nothing to contribute prior to that or what happened after that when the shot was fired, I got nothing for this witness.
Nothing. The witness says himself, he walks inside. He didn't see the shooting. He didn't see anything else except for this one instant.
Now, see, first of all, wait a minute. You guys are wrong. First of all, he heard a pop. He doesn't know what a gunshot
was. After he walked inside, he said, I'm calling the police. He walks inside. He walks upstairs.
James,
he hears the pop.
James, you're not disputing that a gun was fired, are you?
No.
He didn't see if Trayvon was getting up. If he let him go, he didn't see anything. He didn't see the shooting.
Wait. Whoa, you're saying that Trayvon was probably letting him go and he shot him anyway?
No,
I didn't say that. All I'm saying is he's not a very credible witness because all he saw was one little instant. One. And a couple of seconds at that. Then turns away and walks inside.
In the famous line of LL Cool J's I'm Bad.
What?
In the famous line of LL Cool J's I'm Bad, I think I'm going to need backup. I think I'm going to need backup. Mike from Florida.
Hold on. Before you bring Mike in from Florida. Hello, Mike. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us.
Hey, guys.
Before we get started with Mike, and please understand, I thought I heard correct yesterday in the Matt Gutman report. He said, and then you can play the audio back, he said that it was George's doctor that said he needed to go get tested.
Then he needed to go see a psychiatrist?
Yes.
That wasn't disputed. I'm just asking why did he
say that? So Matt Gutman was only reporting what George's psychiatrist said that he should do.
Of course he should see
not
a
that he was suggesting
after
that
killing somebody.
Not that he was suggesting that George Zimmerman might have been loopy or was going to try to claim insanity or anything, because that was his own doctor that told him to go.
Okay, fine. Mike, please.
Hey, guys.
Am I out of my mind here, Mike? And thank you, as always, Michael. Our friendly neighborhood contributor, Mike from Florida. Mike, tell me.
You're not out of your mind, and I want to address something that was the quote from Dan Abrams, you know, who is ABC's super legal analyst, got his Juris Doctorate from Columbia and went to Duke, so apparently a pretty intelligent guy, right? Should be a legal mind. I'm going to read a statute for you from Florida law. This is Florida State Statute 776.041. It's use of force by aggressor. Because Mr. Abrams said that if George Zimmerman were the aggressor, that he can't claim self-defense, right? Okay. It says, the justification described in the preceding sections of this chapter is not available to a person who, one, is attempting to committing or escaping after the commission of a forcible felony, or two, initially provoked the use of force against himself or herself, unless, subsection A, such force is so great that the person reasonably believes that he or she is in imminent danger of death for great bodily harm, and that he or she has exhausted every reasonable means to escape such danger other than the use of force, which is likely to cause death or great bodily harm to the assailant. Or B, in good faith, the person withdraws from physical contact with the assailant, indicates clearly that he or she desires to withdraw and terminate the use of force, but the assailant continues or resumes the use of force.
Okay, so you're saying that Dan Abrams has got it wrong when he suggests...
I'm saying, yeah, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Right.
Well,
so the bottom
line hold on.
Based on what
you just said, based on what Mike just said, none of that applies in this case.
Actually, yes,
sure
it does. It's exactly what he said. What Mike just said, and I'll break it down for you in layman's, what he's saying is that even if George Zimmerman got into a physical confrontation with Trayvon Martin, and they did have a fight, if George Zimmerman is on the ground and is no longer, engaged
in a fight,
trying to get the kid off of him, but, in other words, he's no longer resisting in a fight with him, right? Like, it's not George Zimmerman and Trayvon fighting each other while he's on the ground.
It's just Trayvon.
And he has the right to use deadly force. So Dan Abrams is wrong in suggesting that this is the statute means whoever started the fight is the one who is – in other words, the burden of proof is not on the person who started the fight. It doesn't matter who started the fight. Once George Zimmerman says and is screaming for his life, even if he started the fight, he is now in a submissive position. He has the means to shoot him. He is in his right to do so. Do I have that right so far, Mike?
Absolutely. And when Trayvon Martin, according to the witness, was straddling George Zimmerman and pounding him like George St. Pierre, he eliminated Zimmerman's avenue of escape.
There you go. There you go.
And again, he had a right. He had a right because he thought he himself was in danger to eliminate the danger that he was in. Nobody says you should
have. No longer in
danger. Where is there a law that says have to run home?
JC, he's not in danger of losing a fight when he's straddling George Zimmerman and pounding on him.
The point is...
not losing a fight. He's not. He's an unarmed...
Listen, there's not a jury in this country. And you're going up before a jury of your peers that are going to say that aren't going to believe that this man was the antagonist in this situation.
It doesn't matter. Antagonism means nothing in the statute. It means nothing.
That's
Florida. That's Florida.
He just said to you what the statute
means.
State
that can't get an election right.
It means nothing in this case. It doesn't matter what it is you think personally.
I can assure you if
you're talking about feelings, JC. You're talking about feelings and public opinion. The statute protects him. Once he is in a submissive position and Trayvon Martin is subduing him and on top of him and pounding him, the tides have changed. It doesn't matter who started the fight. It is who is the submissive and who is the aggressor at the point of impact. In other words, the impact meaning the gunshot. So if Trayvon Martin is beating him down MMA style, which a witness will and will obviously corroborate.
MMA style? Come on, man. What is MMA style?
Give me a second. Based on what you just said, if he was straddling him like you say he was, like the witness says he was, and he was submissive, how did he get his gun?
Not difficult.
It's not difficult?
Obviously. Not difficult at all. Obviously. If you have if I have one free hand, I can pull my concealed weapon out of the holster in my waistband. Not a big deal.
Exactly.
Nobody said that he was holding. It would be impossible for him to be bashing the man's head on the ground and holding his hand down.
Exactly. And
you don't watch MMA.
In my opinion.
No. He clearly isn't holding his hands down. He's just pummeling him, and the evidence proves all of that. The bloody nose, the broken nose, the gashes on the back.
That could have come from punches while they were standing and wrestling. That could have come from
the bruises to the back of his head?
Yeah,
that could have came from him slamming his head against the floor.
I figure the broken nose comes from, as Zimmerman said, getting sucker punched, and that's where the bruising in the eyes comes from, and then the cuts on the back of the head come from either bouncing off the concrete or getting it bashed on the concrete.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless,
I'm gonna reserve until I hope and pray to heaven and God above, Lord Jesus, that this trial is gonna end up on TV. I'm doing everything I can imaginable to be glued into that TV.
Oh no! I want this thing to. You don't live here, dude. I want this thing to go away. I want the judge to dismiss it fast.
This is Florida. This is Florida. Florida's like a lot different from everywhere else in the country.
Mike, do you believe that if they dismiss it, the same reaction won't happen if he's found not guilty?
Well, yeah, but you won't have 6 months or so for it to stew. You know what I mean?
Okay, I agree with you there. You're absolutely
and you won't,
correct.
You won't have to deal with the media circus like an OJ or a
Caribbean
pot kind of deal. Just get it done fast.
Yeah.
Although if they delay the trial, you know, it is going to be good for gun sales. So I'm sure the gun dealers would be happy about that one.
Mm.
You are right about that. Yeah, it's going to be bad. All right, well, James is, I don't know. I am awestruck.
Because I'm just imagining the nightmare that's going to happen if this is allowed to stand. Because basically what you're saying is the statute says it doesn't matter who the aggressor was, whatever. If you're losing a fight, you can shoot someone.
Well,
that's
yeah,
how people
exactly.
are going to take this. Now, what's going to happen is you're going to have a whole bunch of people carrying guns. They're going to allow themselves to get hit first and then go guns blazing.
Yeah, but you know, this has been on books since 2005. This is the same argument. This is basically the same argument that people throw every time a state wants to enact a concealed carry permit law.
Right.
They say, "Oh man, it's gonna be the Wild West, and folks are gonna shoot it out of the parking spaces." It doesn't happen.
James, and you're absolutely right, Mike. Arthur Hayhoe, who was on our show just 2 days ago, made that exact same argument that you made, James. And what did he find since 2005? He found 100 cases, and he found 15 of them that are remotely similar to this particular case. 15.
And he couldn't prove any of them.
Exactly. He couldn't prove it.
It was, it was one guy's word against the other, and, you know, you have to take the word of the guy who's alive, obviously.
Yeah, that's it. All right, we'll take a break when we come back.
Like I said,
Mike,
still a nightmare.
Mike, stay on the line. I want you to read that statute one more time for me.
Sure.
To break it down, because I want that on the record. I want you to, unimpeded, I want you to give that clearly, because I want everyone to hear it when we get back. It's Reese on the Radio. Stick around, guys. We'll be back.
Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the 5 states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dude Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Blue.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey,
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said, because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States. States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
But our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward. And the state of our union is strong.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours, a great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reason Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right, ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.reeseontheradio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
Getting our first look at never-before-seen photographs of defendant George Zimmerman taken at the jail after he was taken into custody the night of the fatal shooting. We're also getting a chance to look at some photographs of the crime scene where the Neighborhood Watch volunteer shot the unarmed teenager. That was on February 26. George Zimmerman has claimed self-defense. And there is this photo of the weapon that George Zimmerman had with him that night. It is a 9mm Caltech pistol. Now, there are also audio recordings with witnesses, and there are long interviews with witnesses where the verbatims are played out. And in one of them, one investigator reported to his interview with Trayvon Martin's father, which was also taken on February 28th. I asked Mr. Martin if the voice calling for help was that of his son. Mr. Martin, who, according to the interviewer, was clearly emotional, impacted by the recording, quietly responded, no. That's in sharp contrast to what Trayvon Martin's mother has said, saying that indeed those screams for help were her son. And in another document,
I love it when a plane comes together.
Woo-hoo!
A long time ago, that there was going to be so much other evidence that was going to come out, and there were going to be all of this stuff. And you heard the lawyer yesterday, Mr. Crum, who said that there was conflicting comments made by George Zimmerman. Well, it turns out that there's some conflicting comments coming out of Trayvon Martin's family as well. Old Papa Bear says that the screaming voice was not that of his son. And the mother came out and said, that is clearly Trayvon. Now, would somebody suggest that dad knows better than mom or dad doesn't know better than mom? It's kind of conflicting. But no one knew anything about that. The only thing they ever heard was that mom said that was clearly her son. Mom said that was clearly her son. Even Derek the Bounty Hunter called up and said, come on, man, you know that's his. That, you heard her. She said that's her son. That sounds like... But everybody else says the only person who was screaming, witnesses say it too, was George Zimmerman. So I want to get Mike back on. Mike, I want you to read this as clearly as you can. I don't know if you've done radio before. I'm not suggesting that you don't know how to read. I'm just saying I want you to clearly point this out, point by point, because I want everyone to hear this statute of the Stand Your Ground law and this particular case. What they would need to counter to find George Zimmerman guilty of shooting Trayvon other than in self-defense.
Okay. Now, before I get to that statute, there's one that I want to explain. There's three statutes in Florida law that refer to use of deadly force. There's use of force in defense of person. There's home protection use of deadly force. And there is use of force in defense of others. Okay, there's the three statutes.
Okay.
Now, statute number 776.032 is titled Immunity from Criminal Prosecution and Civil Action for Justifiable Use of Force. Subsection 1, a person who uses force as permitted in the three statutes I named for you is justified in using such force and is immune from criminal prosecution and civil action for the use of such force, unless the person against whom force was used is a law enforcement officer acting in his official duties. Subsection 2, a law enforcement agency may use standard procedures for investigating the use of force as described in subsection 1, but the agency may not arrest the person for using force unless it determines there is probable cause the force that used was unlawful. Subsection 3, this is where it gets interesting. The court shall award reasonable attorney's fees, court costs, compensation for loss of income, and all expenses incurred by the defendant in defense of any civil action brought by a plaintiff if the court finds the defendant is immune from prosecution as provided in subsection 1. So if they, first of all, he's immune from being sued or prosecuted in this, and if Crump does sue them, Zimmerman's going to get repaid if he has to take it to court. Now, use of force by aggressor, which is statute 776.041.
Okay, now use of force by aggressor. That is to suggest if George Zimmerman was the aggressor in the altercation. Is that correct?
Right. Right, okay. And I suppose we'd have to define what aggressor means, but I'll go with the defense that's been thrown forward that even if Zimmerman threw the first punch, which is not likely, but we know it's not because there's no marks on a kid, but say he instigated this by verbal means, okay?
Right, right.
The justification described in the preceding sections of this chapter is not available to a person who, subsection 1, is attempting to committing or escaping after the commission of a forcible felony. Well, that doesn't apply because this applies to somebody who
did a crime and is escaping and just trying
right,
to
he was breaking into right, breaking into him. Someone's house and then
right.
fired. Right.
Right. Subsection 2, initially provokes the use of force against himself or herself, unless, subsection A, such force is so great that the person reasonably believes that he or she is in imminent danger of death or great bodily harm, and that he or she has exhausted every reasonable means to escape such danger other than the use of force, which is likely to cause death or great bodily harm to the assailant. So if the eyewitness reports are accurate that Trayvon Martin was on top of George Zimmerman, giving him a, quote, mixed martial arts style ground and pound beating, there's not much he can do to escape the danger because he's being held, basically he's being held hostage. He's being held captive.
Okay. All right.
And then subsection B says, in good faith, the person withdraws from physical contact with the assailant and indicates clearly to the assailant that he or she desires to withdraw and terminate the use of force, but the assailant continues or resumes the use of force.
And that could be, hold on, now that can be suggested that George Zimmerman screaming for help is obviously him giving up, saying he's no longer engaging in that altercation.
Exactly.
Okay.
And you have how many witnesses who say that they heard Zimmerman calling for help? Is it
witnesses on the record saying that, yes.
On the record. Not recent witnesses, but scene of the incident.
Right.
Day up. So it looks like, Dan Abrams aside, Angela Corey violated state law by overruling the state's attorney and prosecuting this.
Okay, so Angela Corey, who is the special prosecutor who gave
right.
George Zimmerman the second-degree murder charge, and therefore that would make Alan Dershowitz claim pretty much right on the mark.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm not an Alan Dershowitz fan. We don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, but the man knows his stuff.
Right.
He's a Harvard law professor.
I give you that because, like I said, I don't see a lot with Alan Dershowitz either, but I give him enough credit to know this guy wouldn't even speak up if he knew that it was going to damage his credibility by giving false statements.
He certainly knows more than Dan Abrams.
That exactly. And it's interesting that none of the other networks have called Alan Dershowitz to their shows at all because he completely nipped this in the bud at all the other networks.
I'm a high school graduate, okay? I have some community college classes. If I, with Google and a Dell computer, can find that statute in 5 minutes, you're telling me that a legal mind like Dan Abrams couldn't find that if he wanted to?
Well, he doesn't care to.
Of course he could. Yeah, he's pursuing his agenda. And there's also an agenda with Matt Gutman. There's a website called theconservativetreehouse.com that's been doing some pretty good research on this. I don't know who the guy is because it's all anonymous. But there's a PR firm called Julison Communications.
Okay.
That the Crump law firm has hired basically to spin this. He's a PR firm. He's doing pro bono work. Yeah.
I do remember this story that there literally was, and I do know this group. This group has literally sought out they were putting out press releases. In fact, there was something with one of the people who were a part of that group that were sending out tweets about all of these great interviews they were getting for this attorney, Mr. Crump.
Yeah, Julison was saying that, I spoke to Matt Gutman, and it almost appears as though he's giving Matt Gutman stories. And now
I lost. Oh, this is so important. I thought we lost him. I'm going to get that website. Okay, so guys, from what you've heard so far, come on, just give me an inch here. Give me an inch.
Mm-mm. Wait a minute. Hold on.
They refuse to give up. Ladies and gentlemen.
Well, no, not that I refuse to give up. Because I'm going to go with the statutes that he had said.
Okay.
All right. The first one, the first subsection where he says he had no other recourse but to use deadly force. Okay. Now, according to witnesses, he was on the ground, and Trayvon is wailing on him. So Trayvon is using his hands to wail on him, and no one says anything as if he tried to kick him off or tried to push him away. None of that. The first thing he does is go for his gun.
Well, okay. Well, you have to actually say the second thing he does, because witnesses say George Zimmerman was screaming. So the first thing he did was...
That's the second part I wanted to get into, because, again, these so-called witnesses, all right, who were...
James, relax, James. Don't call them so-called witnesses.
Wait a minute, hold on. I say so-called because these people... all said they never left their doorways.
James,
okay?
Hold on. You cannot suggest that they are so-called witnesses in this case because their veracity has never been challenged. No one witness has turned out to be a George Zimmerman fan.
Right, how about alleged? Same thing, but, you know, I guess it's
I'll give them witness status, me personally. However, like I said, I'll give them witness status.
Yeah, that's all you have to do, give them witness status.
Yeah, but they're basically, I don't want to call them hearsay witnesses, because all they did was hear.
Mm-hmm.
Witness
and
told.
No one can say.
Hold on.
That's another thing. That's a big open hole in that. Because who's to say that they know what either Trayvon Martin or George Zimmerman sound like? None of them actually went over to the altercation. No one tried to help this man.
James, hold on. That's true. Nobody went over to help George Zimmerman. No one went
right.
over to help him.
They were basically standing in front of their doors, and all they could do was hear a voice. They don't know whose voice it is, and they can't truthfully say so.
Well, they can see who's beating who, right?
Well, we've only had, one witness to come forth and say that.
Well, no. There are other witnesses. These are the only witness. This is the only witness audio they released. So let's play it again so we can listen to it.
No.
Hold on. This is what he saw.
Okay.
This isn't something that he and he talks about what he didn't see, and when he left, he talks about what he saw.
Right.
There was a black man with a black hoodie on top of either a white guy, or now that I found out that he was a Hispanic guy with a red sweatshirt on the ground, yelling out help. And then, you know, I tried to tell him, get out of here, you know, stop or whatever. And then the one guy on top in the black hoodie was pretty much just throwing down blows on the guy, kind of MMA style. So at this point, I told him I was calling 911. I locked my door, went inside, heard a pop, never heard a gunshot before, so I didn't know if it was a rock or something like that. We ran upstairs. As soon as I got upstairs, I looked down below, and then I saw the guy in the black hoodie pretty much just laid out on the ground.
Okay, so he spoke to them as they were fighting and said, get out of here, knock it off, I'm calling the cops. So I don't know who he was screaming at. The only person I can assume he's screaming at is the person he sees who's the aggressor, and that's Trayvon in this case. He couldn't be screaming at George, get out of here. He's getting his ass whipped. Is that fair to say? Is that a fair assumption, James?
Yeah, that's fair. Very fair. But again, he can assume. He can't say for sure. He can only assume.
And I say, no, it's not fair.
It's not fair, Jamie?
No. He said, I told him, you guys knock it off.
Well, yeah. Well, he doesn't know whether or not they're two guys just having a regular fight. You're absolutely right. Fair enough. I'll give you that one.
Especially if he's a witness that's going on the stand.
Let's get Mike back in. Mike, you okay? Your phone's okay?
Yeah, I dropped or something. Who knows?
Sorry. Now, you were going on about this website, And I want to get the guy's response to this. JC, can you go to the website? Give JC the website again that has
it's
called
Clubhouse Conservatives or something like that.
Conservative
called,
Treehouse.
The conservativetreehouse.com.
The conservativetreehouse.com. Okay.
And they pretty much broke this thing down. It's basically a dissertation at this point on how screwed up this case is. It's so intertwined. It looks like the PR firm also worked on the case where Zimmerman defended the black homeless guy who was beaten by the cops kid.
Right.
And apparently Natalie Jackson is the attorney who's in with Crump. She represented the homeless black guy.
Okay.
And actually knows George Zimmerman from that case. But she was, instrumental in pursuing and pushing this George Zimmerman as a big racist idea that Crump and his people put forward. It's a nightmare. And I would not be surprised if you see disbarments on this thing.
So you're
starting
saying
with
now
Crump.
Now, I know this Natalie Jackson. When we first started talking about George Zimmerman and this case to defend Sherman Ware, when mm-hmm. Sherman Ware was sucker punched, Natalie Jackson was one of the people who was a spokesperson for Sherman Ware and getting justice for this
right.
homeless guy and going up against the police department because she was screaming how the police department was acting and there was a racial overtone into why they would not, and part of the fact that they were protecting their own and one of their own
yeah.
kid. And
so
I remember that distinctly. But you're saying that when this case came out, this woman pretty much pretended like she devoured any and all information about George Zimmerman being heavily involved in that case.
Yeah, and she is, that's unethical of her not to say that. She is kind of bound by her oath as an attorney to disclose that information. And she didn't.
All right. Disclose it to whom?
The Bar Association, the media.
I wouldn't say that she would have to disclose it to the media. If she discloses it in her brief.
If she has information and personal knowledge that George Zimmerman's character is not what's being portrayed by her friend, Mr. Crump, she needs to come forward and say that.
Absolutely. In essence, she's aiding and abetting in slander. Yeah, that's what she's aiding and abetting.
Okay, now, again, who must she report this to other than the media? She don't have to report anything to the media.
No. If she openly described George Zimmerman as a racist, knowing that he had personal involvement in getting justice for Sherman Ware, that means that she publicly slandered him, knowing that that was indeed not true.
Yeah, this is about money. This is all this is. This Crump, who's the family attorney, he's not an actual, real, Matlock-type attorney. He's an ambulance chaser.
Matlock?
He's a personal injury lawyer. He's not Perry Mason. He's like the guy on Breaking Bad, Call Saul. He's a sleazy ambulance chaser. And they're planning to be...
Now who's going with slander? I mean, you know this how.
Well, that's what he does. That's how he makes his money. He's an ambulance chaser, personal injury attorney.
Calling a lawyer an ambulance chaser is not slander, James. It's always reflective of the cases that they cover. Chaser is a well-known term and pejorative of lawyers who, they get their names by taking on personal injury cases.
He's not a personal injury lawyer.
Is that it? I'm just saying where he's getting it from.
That's what he does. Why he's involved in a criminal case is beyond me. But he's looking to get money. He's going to sue the HOA. He'll probably try to sue Caltech. They're going to try to sue everybody.
This is a very important thing to consider here, guys? That this guy, Crump, what do the parents need an attorney for? They have the district attorney's office working for them. They have attorneys on this case. in order to get justice for their son. They
well,
don't need a personal
considering how
attorney.
This case considering how this case initially started, how the police department and the state's attorney was supposed to work for them, and they initially weren't.
But no, JC.
The police department and the state's attorney follow the law. They
exactly.
don't work for
you know,
somebody. They follow
right.
the law.
And they're following the law. In this particular case, the Justice Department is doing one thing. And as you heard Angela Corey say in her press conference, that we are seeking justice for Trayvon Martin, which in and of itself is the wrong thing for any prosecutor to say. Because the prosecutor is supposed to say, we are seeking justice in this case. We don't pick sides as a prosecutor.
Right. Now, wait a minute. How come no one's been punished for this as of yet? I mean, that was like, what, a month ago now?
Oh, no. They,
hey,
Nifong.
We ain't done yet.
Remember, Nifong was never, and I'm talking about the prosecutor Nifong in the Duke LaCrosse case. He was not punished until after all of the evidence came out in the Duke LaCrosse case. And then he was disbarred, and, you know, arrested and jailed. You know, all of that happened after the fact.
Well, this is far from a Duke LaCrosse case.
But,
this,
you know,
this is the same thing.
But the point is, if this case gets dismissed, if the judge, Judge Lester, says, you know, this is a self-defense case, this man has immunity, Crump's entire gambit is ruined. So it's in his best interest to stir up as much nonsense as possible to get this to go to trial. He doesn't even have – Zimmerman can be found not guilty, but it's got to go to trial for him to get paid, for him to be able to sue people.
That's right. That's exactly what's got to happen.
Well, I will admit, and I do agree that a whole lot of personal agendas have been casting a huge shadow on this case. Even with the prosecutor, I mean, it just seems to go for murder too. I actually hung my head down because it was almost like you're giving him an out. I mean, even I could see it was more manslaughter than murder, too. You just wanted to look like you were being hard on crime. Meanwhile, you gave the man his free ticket home.
You're absolutely right. We'll take a break when we come back. Barack Obama, is he from Kenya? I love this story. We'll be back in Streets on the Radio.
Right where you are, don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity and all the...
Mary had a little man, he was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the man was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
Ah! Ah!
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
And we are back 4 minutes after the hour right here on this Therapy Thursday. May the 17th, 2012, 2 days after my brother's birthday. Okay, I won't do it anymore. Anyway. Okay. Help me out here, folks, because I want to hear from you guys what your opinion is. Now, again, I'm going to do what it is that I always do. I am going to annoy the crap out of Kool-Aid Man, James Montgomery. I'm going to annoy him. Because I already know what he's going to say. He hates it when I say that. Because I know what he's going to say in this case. If he surprises me, folks, I want him to. I want him to surprise me and say, well, you know what? You might be right about that. I want him to surprise me, but I know he's going to say otherwise. But what I really want, he doesn't understand it, is what I desperately want from him is to surprise me. So when I say, I know what Jamie's going to say, and then he surprised me, I look wrong, and I like it that way. I like it when I'm wrong. It's not easy being right all the time. You want to know why? Because when you're right, people hate you more. When you're wrong, they know that you're foul. You have faults. They know you're not perfect, and they're more comfortable with you. But it doesn't happen. What happens is that I'm always right, at least 70, 75% of the time. I'm always right. Well, okay, that wouldn't constitute as always, but most of the time, I'm right. So, when I say I know what James is going to say, and then he ends up saying it, and he refuses to then say it. He'll just hang up on the phone. He doesn't want to talk anymore, even though he knows that I knew what he was going to say. So I'm hoping that he surprises me here. This story came out of Breitbart today. And they are doing what they're considering the vetting of Barack Obama. They're going into Barack Obama's history. Who is this man? Where did he come from? What his ideology is, what books he's read, what people he believes in, where he gets his doctrine from. Who are his friends? Who are his allies? Who coached him? Who trained him? Who taught him? What does he believe? What does he want? Who is he? He came out of nowhere, but yet no one's ever seen a college dissertation. No one's ever seen a school grade. And there was much to do about his birth certificate. So give me a minute while I read this. Today at roughly, and I'm almost certain, this was at 3 o'clock this afternoon, this story was released. The headline reads, "The Vetting, Exclusive. Obama's Literary Agent in 1991 Booklet Reads, Born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii." This is the, I want to say the, This is what Breitbart wrote as a note to everyone who read this article before you read the actual story. The preface of all of this, they wanted to make something abundantly clear, that this didn't come from them. They don't believe in this birther thing. Let me break down and I'll read to you what it says. This says, "A note from senior management. Andrew Breitbart was never a birther, and Breitbart News is a site that has never advocated the narrative of birtherism. In fact, Andrew believed, as we do, that President Barack Obama was born in Honolulu, Hawaii on August 4th, 1961. Yet, Andrew also believed that the complicit mainstream media had refused to examine President Obama's ideological past or the carefully crafted persona he and his advisors had constructed for him. It is for that reason that we launched The Vetting, an ongoing series in which we explore the ideological background of President Obama and other presidential candidates, not to relitigate 2008, but because ideas and actions have consequences. It is also in that spirit that we discovered and now present the booklet described below, one that includes a marketing pitch for a forthcoming book by then young, otherwise unknown former president of the Harvard Law Review. It is evidence, not of the president's foreign origin, but that Barack Obama's public persona has perhaps been presented differently at different times. Breitbart News has obtained a promotional booklet produced in 1991 by Barack Obama's then literary agent, Acton and Disto, which touts Obama as born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. The booklet, which was distributed to business colleagues in the publishing industry, includes a brief biography of Obama among the biographies of 89 other authors represented by Acton and Disto. It also promotes Obama's anticipated first book, originally called Journeys in Black and White, which was then later published as Dreams of My Father. Obama's biography in the booklet is as follows. Barack Obama, the first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review, was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii, the son of an American anthropologist and a Kenyan finance minister. He attended Columbia University and worked as financial journalist and editor for Business International Corporation. He served as project coordinator in Harlem for the New York Public Interest Research Group and was executive director of the Developing Communities Project in Chicago's South Side. His commitment to social and racial issues will be evident in his first book, Journeys in Black and White. It goes on to read, Barack Obama, the first African-American president of the Harvard Law Review. Okay, I'm sorry. I'm just reading back the same thing. Sorry. The booklet, which is 36 pages long, is printed in blue ink, and on the cover, silver and gray ink, using offset lithography, it purports to celebrate the 15th anniversary of Acton and Disto, which was founded in 1976. Then they show the cover. You can read it yourself at Breitbart.com, not .tv, .com. J. Acton no longer represents Obama. However, Jane Distel still lists Obama as a client of her agency's on her agency's website. According to the booklet itself, the text was edited by Miriam Goderk, who has since become Distel's partner at Distel Goderk, an agency founded in 1994. Breitbart News attempted to reach Goderk by telephone several times over several days. Her calls are screened by an automated service that requires callers to state their name and company, which we did. She never answered. The design of the booklet was undertaken by Richard Belzy, who has since closed his business. Belzy, reached by telephone, could not recall exact details of the booklet, but told Breitbart News that it sounds like one of our jobs, like I did for Acton and Disto 20 years ago or more. Now, listen, just to let you know, this was no fly-by-night publishing company. The people who they represented were powerful names. The authors alongside Obama on this particular booklet was former Speaker of the House Tip O'Neill, sports legends Joe Montana of the San Francisco 49ers, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, as well as other numerous Hollywood celebrities. Even Ralph Nader is listed, as well as the pop sensation, this is 1991, the pop sensation, New Kids on the Block. So this wasn't some random fly-by-night group. This was a legitimate literary agency who described Barack Obama as a Kenyan raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. What do I think about this information? Well, there's only one way to look at it. Barack Obama was lying. That's all I can tell you. It's up for you. It's up to you to decide what he was lying about. Don't spin it any other way. You can try. But Barack Obama turns out to be a liar, one way or another. Now, I know what's going to be said. So before I get the comment, I want you to hear this. Literary agent says 1991 booklet was a mistake. Even though the booklet and the information on it has been used from 1991 till 2007. It was never corrected. The same information about Barack Obama, that he was born in Kenya and raised in Indonesia and Hawaii, remained on their website from 1991 until 2007 on their own website. This is what the literary agent says about the booklet. Miriam Goder, who I just mentioned, issued the following statement to the news agency called Political Wire. You're undoubtedly aware of the brouhaha stirred up by Breitbart about the erroneous statement in a client list Acton and Distel published in 1991 for circulation within the publishing industry only, that Barack Obama was born in Kenya. This was nothing more than a fact-checking error by me, an agency assistant at the time. There was never any information given to us by Obama in any of his correspondence or other communications suggesting in any way that he was born in Kenya, not Hawaii. I hope you can communicate to your readers that this was a simple mistake and nothing more. Full disclosure, I am a client of the same literary agency. That was her statement. I see a flaw. Let's see whether or not our esteemed panel, our intrepid crew, can find the flaw in her statement. But first, because I know he'll get angry, we must let Kool-Aid Man go first. James?
So basically, it's a typo.
It's a typo?
Obviously. Isn't that what she said? It was a mistake.
Put my way.
They're saying that it was a mistake, and that's that. What else? That she said it herself. It's a mistake. Why are you still talking about this?
So it was a mistake, James. Anybody else? Let's let Mike go. He's new to the program. Just kidding. Mike, help me out here. What's wrong with Miss Goddard's statement?
Well, not sure I'm following you, but I'll tell you what I think happened. Okay. I think that it's quite possible that Mr. Obama let this go. Because, you know, these kind of things always, the person who's the subject of the write-up always gets approved to approve, I'm quite certain. Him being portrayed as Barack Obama from Kenya is going to put far more people in the seats and buying books than being Barry Sotero from Hawaii. That's why he goes by Barack Obama, because that sounds, oh, man, that sounds exotic. Much more exotic than Barry. It's like Elizabeth Warren telling people she's Indian.
I knew you would bring her up, and I'm glad you did. Go for it.
Elizabeth Warren was not only Indian, not but it seems like her great-great-grandpappy rounded up Indians and made them walk on the Trail of Tears or whatever.
The Trail of Tears, that's right. That's what we found out. Yep.
You know, it's all about image. I mean, I don't think Obama in that stage of his life thought he was going to run for president. So being the, you know, I was born in godforsaken Africa and I became the president of Harvard Law Review sounds a whole lot better than, dude, I grew up smoking weed on the beach in Hawaii and surfing, you know.
Thank you. I actually agree with that.
But either way,
and the thing is, it's all moot anyway, because didn't he give in his birth certificate?
We're not going to talk about that today.
But
I
think
no, we're not
going to
talk about that. Why not?
No. This
go
woman
ahead,
doesn't want to. She doesn't want to end up like Breitbart, you know, red faced and dead on the sidewalk outside a restaurant. So she's going to put this all on her back.
Mike, you and I are going to discuss that on a later date on this show. Because I got your Twitter, I got your tweet, and I thought about it, and I said, I'm not going to go there yet. I really, really want to go over that with you first.
You know, he's guilty of lying somewhere. You know, either he was born in Kenya and the whole thing is a scam and he shouldn't be president, which I don't think is the case, or he told him he was born in Kenya so he could have a better byline to sell the book. Or it was a mistake, and he let it go because it was beneficial to him to be portrayed as Barack from Kenya. So,
okay.
You know,
I'm willing to accept that. JC, where are you?
No, because basically, and at the time, it wasn't hurting anybody. So what?
Right, JC, where are you with this?
I kind of agree with Mike on this one.
Okay, good.
That it made more sense to use that particular name.
You're absolutely right. Look, if anybody knows to embellish on a resume, I know. Okay? I know. Okay? I got heat for it too. Okay? To embellish on a resume. But let me break this down to you where the problem is with Miriam Goderk's statement. Okay? The bottom line is that this is what they wrote in a literary column, right? And they're dealing with people like Joe Montana, Tip O'Neill, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. They're dealing with some heavyweights in 1991. They're not dealing with just nobodies, heavyweights. But let me give you the quote that makes me really suspicious that she's pulling the wool over our eyes, and she hasn't thought this out. When she says, and I thought, and I'm going to repeat it. When she says this was nothing more than a fact-checking error by me, an agency assistant at the time. There was never any information given to us by Obama in any of his correspondence or other communications suggesting in any way that he was born in Kenya, not Hawaii. So my question to you is, why is it there? She said, no correspondence with Barack Obama. She doesn't say with his people. She doesn't say with somebody who gave us information. In none of our correspondence with Obama does he indicate he was born in Kenya. So my question is, why is it there?
Well, we'll never know that. You'd have to ask her. She made the mistake.
Whoa. Of course she'll never say. Because the truth of the matter is that this was a literary injury.
I never said she'll never say. I said she made the mistake.
No. She made a mistake by saying he was born in Kenya when he never gave any indication that he was. Where did she come up with Kenya?
Well, if he I don't know, and I'm not going to speculate on that.
From his father? His father was dead when he was 16.
Who said anything about his father?
JC just did.
Oh.
So what do they say you are what your father is?
Where do they get born in Kenya, raised in Indonesia and Hawaii?
More exciting than born in Hawaii.
I'm with you in agreeing with Mike. But her explanation has holes in it. How do you get Kenya, Indonesia, and Hawaii? Because if you break it down, his story says born in Hawaii, raised in Indonesia, goes back to his grandparents in Hawaii. Why does Kenya show up at all?
Where was his
because
father
his
from?
Father was Kenyan.
No. There's no story about Barack Obama living at any time in Kenya. None. There's no story.
Well, then you're not listening very well, because at some point his grandmother said he was born in Kenya.
No, excuse me. His grandmother was not a part of his literary agency in 1991.
No, I understand that.
So this is something that was written in 1991. Where do you get Kenya ever imposed in this biography? Where do you get it from? If this guy said that if this woman says that
I think you're pushing to get someone to say that Barack gave that information. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Now he's trying to push a narrative. He wants us to say that, oh, well, Barack must have told her that.
No. Did she get it on her own?
Oh, come on, man. You
did
know, sometimes
she get it on her own.
Dude,
did she
of course
get it
he from- told her.
Exactly.
Of course he told her.
I know. That's exactly what he wanted us to say. But you know, we're not going to say it because we weren't there. I can't say that he said that.
And neither can anyone else.
But wait a minute.
We're speculating and drawing conclusions on what? Based on information that has not been released?
JC, hold on. Give me a second here, guys. It's not about speculation here. This is about deductive reasoning. It's critical thinking.
Deductive reasoning, which is...
It's like Jesse Ventura telling people that he was a Navy SEAL. But he wasn't a Navy SEAL. He was UDT. It's badass, but it's not a SEAL. But nobody knows what a UDT is. So he tells people he's a SEAL. The Navy SEALs don't even like Ventura. So it's the same kind of principle, you know. You tell people something that's more interesting
that
than what it
those
is.
Those words, you can know that there is actual proof that those words came out of his own mouth. There is no proof, no evidence,
no
anywhere
fact.
That
no
can
fact.
Say that Barack Obama told her he was from Kenya.
Well,
as
the wise Reese said, it comes down to deductive reasoning.
You have a clear agenda, so you're just grasping at straws,
and you're trying to call it deductive reasoning? Okay, James, then how come this thing stayed in print for that many years if it was incorrect and Mr. Obama
if
didn't know
it? If it was incorrect,
say,
you know what? Who reads the credits? Who really reads the credits? It's basically, you know what, you just read the name and you move on.
You would think that if you're running for Senate and trying to have a literary career, that you're going to vet your own bio, unless you're James Frye and you're going to go on Oprah and sell a lie of a book. So either way, he's a liar.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. The bottom line is deductive reasoning says that someone at Acton and Driscoll decided to leave this there and or write it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or write it for that matter and leave it there. Hold on. You're saying that someone there decided on their own. Let's say that he's born in Kenya and he had nothing to do with it. That we just drummed up the idea, Kenya said, let's make this interesting and say he was born in Kenya.
And he never saw it.
Right.
He never saw it after that, right?
Exactly.
But he never saw it afterwards?
And never
but still,
played
any good publicist would have.
But he never saw this pamphlet afterwards and never in those, 8 years said, hey, guys, you know, I was born in Hawaii. Why don't you fix this? It looks bad. You're making
exactly.
me a liar.
It gets better than that, Mike. Here's where it gets better. How many books did he release under this under this literary agency? He released 2, guys.
Yeah, the agency that lied about him, apparently. So
yeah, that lied about his bio, released 2 books, Dreams of My Father and The Audacity of Hope.
So either he told him a lie or he didn't care that they lied. So that's pretty bad.
It's so quiet. Where are we going here? Come on, James. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's not his fault. There he is. James?
Yeah?
Come on. Either, again, 2 books were released by this agency, It stayed from 1991 to 2007. That's 16 years.
16 years. All right. And once again, all right, no one's – look, you, no one reads the credits anyway. All right?
Well,
if he noticed it, and if he did notice it, then, you know, it can be construed that, you know, it was not that big a deal. All right? Just move on. I got better things to do than to chase this down. You know, but to just leap to the fact that he lied, or is a liar, or allowed
or
people to lie
about
him, that's pushing your own agenda. That somehow his credibility and his veracity needs to be called into question because
no,
of a typo.
It's not an
Come
agenda.
On.
It's a fact. If he knew this bogus bio was out there, he owed it to the public to have
we
it corrected.
We don't even know if he did. If he knew it. If,
16 years? Dude, come on. You think this was embedded when he decided to run for president?
Come on. Again.
You think nobody. Okay, then his entire organization that backed him in his run for president is incompetent by not seeing this and addressing it in 2007 or 2008. So which is it?
Well,
okay.
Yeah,
a liar?
In 2007,
is he a liar
did.
Or is he surrounded, surrounded by incompetence?
Everyone else who vetted it must be incompetent as well because this hasn't been found out till now.
That's the greatest part about this story, James, is that the
so
media...
So everyone's incompetent. Is that right?
James, the first of all, it's already been deemed that the media refused to vet this president in anything on his background, and here was something... That was
right.
clearly
the
written.
The media wasn't, but there were also the birthers. There were everyone else who decided to take it upon themselves to do so, and neither one of them found this out
but
either.
James,
because
no,
if
no.
they did, you have to know it would have been on every newsprint or scope anywhere.
James, remember, hold on. The birthers who were out there never had this information. That's a fact. The birthers never had this information about this file, right? They never had it. They had nothing to solidify that Barack Obama was directly linked to being born in Kenya. Nothing. Until Breitbart found this literary
and
column, right?
And where's Andrew Breitbart now, guys?
Breitbart is the only person who ever found it.
No, Breitbart is dead. This is the
yeah.
people at Breitbart News who found this. Okay?
Oh, well,
Andrew
you said Breitbart, so...
No, I'm saying that no one knew about this. None of the birthers had this information. The birthers just said, where's your birth certificate? Where's your birth certificate? Where's your birth certificate? They didn't have any birth certificate, couldn't find one. People were trying to get it. There were lawsuits and people trying to get court documents, filing court papers to get to his birth certificate and all that other stuff. So the birthers were on a wild goose chase. Now, with all of that being said, no one...
And yet here was this...
No one ever went to this literary agency. No one ever went there. This is a literary agency that dealt with Barack Obama in 91 when he had no aspirations to be president of the United States. None. He had no aspirations for public office. None. And in his bio, it reads, born in Kenya, raised in Indonesia and Hawaii. That's what. But according to his own biography, his own personal biography, born in Hawaii, raised in Indonesia, goes back to Hawaii, raised there, and then grew up most of his formidable years in Chicago. So again, this is something that was in 1991, and here is a woman who is saying that it was a mistake. We never got that information from Obama, so who put it there? Who put born in Kenya? Who put born in Kenya, raised in Indonesia?
You need to ask them. And frankly, it doesn't matter anymore.
Of course
it really doesn't because he did put, you know, give in the birth certificate. So the question is moot anyway.
Actually, here's where it makes it funny because Barack Obama said he didn't know where any of this quote-unquote birther stuff was coming from. And if people had checked deep enough, they'd have known it came directly from the 1991 bio that was written about him.
Wait a minute, but if it came directly from the 1991 bio, then why didn't anyone bring that up?
Because
you can't
no
take
one,
it directly
no
from one, the file, because that denotes that someone knew about it and decided to make a stink. But no one gave the evidence of the bio.
But James, it was clear that no one knew about it until now. So now the question.
Right, so if no one, are you listening to yourself? Are you listening to yourself? If no one knew about it, how is it a direct result of that? If no one knew about it,
James, most of the information about Barack Obama has never been revealed. We don't even have a grade that Barack Obama ever got in college.
But we know that Mitt Romney gave a guy a haircut in prep school.
That's what I'm saying. We know that. That's exactly right. We know that Mitt Romney gave a kid a haircut and held him down and gave an ambiguously gay guy a haircut 46 years ago.
46 years ago.
We know that now. We know that now because they can't now say. That, you know, you're not going to try to dig into everything because of this birther thing.
Well, wait a minute.
They're on the up and up with everyone, James.
They dug into George W. Bush like crazy, remember? They went back to him doing coke in the 70s, and they questioned his military service. Oh. You're telling me they couldn't have vetted Obama? No, they vetted Romney like crazy. They're going after everybody except Obama.
But you're saying there's only one side vetting Obama? There's only one side?
The Democrats just hid everything, and the Republicans couldn't find anything. James, dude, you calm down, man. You get way too hot, man. Have you seen an interview with any of Barack Obama's, I don't know, former high school girlfriends or classmates or teachers or anything? I haven't.
I've never seen that. Have you seen any of that, James? We've met nobody, no one who's ever gone to school with Barack Obama. No one he's dated. We've never met anybody. Even when these new reports came about his ambiguous girlfriend, who she wrote in an article in Vanity Fair that just came out, that she said to Barack Obama, "I love you," and he said, "Thank you." We still have not even talked to that girlfriend.
She's a pimping your haters.
But no,
it's just weird, man.
We've never met them.
Nobody's ever said, you know, I hung out with Barry and we surfed in Hawaii or anything.
We've never talked to anybody in his past.
Maybe he was an antisocial.
No, he wasn't an antisocial.
No.
The guy was an activist and a community organizer.
They refused to.
There's not a lot of antisocial people who do coke and smoke weed.
This is true.
Those are pretty social drugs.
that's because the media and the public has named it a social drug. But I know people who sniff alone.
Ain't a whole lot of potheads who smoke alone.
I don't know a lot of potheads who do either.
Yeah, it's just weird. I
can't support you on that one, Jay.
I do my dirt on mine only.
I don't believe that the dude was born in Kenya, but I believe he let people say he was born in Kenya because it was exotic and sexy. He probably told girls he was born in Kenya, too. And his name was Barack instead of Barry, because you get laid a lot more as Barack than Barry.
But wouldn't you? Come on. Now you're going to say, he is red-blooded American male.
If I was trying to pick up chicks, I'll tell him my name is Mick and not Mike. I do that crap all the time, sure.
All right. So thank you. And
I wouldn't put it on my bio and make it public record. You know, I wouldn't say, you know, my name's Mick and I was born in Ireland when I wasn't.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. It has to be questioned. And if I were Barack Obama,
it doesn't have to be questioned.
Breitbart, what's his name? The pill popper with the beard got always crying.
Oh, Rush
Limbaugh.
Oh, yeah. Rush.
He has to have something to say about it because it sells stories. He shut down Drudge Report today. I'm sure that the server fell flat when he announced on his show, go to Drudge Report. I wonder how much Drudge Report paid him for that one.
Probably nothing.
Probably
no,
nothing.
Drudge
I know, because the rich protect their own.
Ridiculous money on that site.
What'd you say, Mike?
Drudge makes something like $15 million a year on his website. You believe
that? The rich protect their own, which is what we've been saying all along.
And what does it possibly cost him to run that site? Have you seen it? It's like HTML 1992.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, to run a site exactly like that, it's probably, hold on, $13, $17, $23 a year.
Wow.
Yeah,
oh,
honestly.
See, there you go.
I build and design them.
Well, hey, the man's a genius. What can you tell him?
He is a genius.
He is.
That's how the rich stay rich.
Do that.
I'm just surprised he hasn't dropped dead on a sidewalk.
Well, take a break. We'll be right back, guys. It's 3-7 Radio. Stick around.
We need to do that.
You're right.
Yeah.
Right where you are, don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The Obama attack machine has started, spending millions to sling mud or oil at Mitt Romney. Why? Because in the five states where Obama's attacking Romney, gas prices have roughly doubled. But Obama's mud can't cover up his failed energy policies, policies that are hurting small businesses and working families. America deserves solutions, not attack ads covering up Obama's failures. 4 years of failed leadership are all we can afford. Send a message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hey, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're Robert Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, Reese, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekdays right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
This is the real state of our union. But you won't hear stories like those at President Obama's address tonight. The unemployed don't get tickets to sit next to the First Lady. Instead tonight, the President will do what he does best. He'll give a nice speech.
The idea of America endures.
A lot of memorable phrases in it.
But our future is hopeful.
But he won't give you the hard numbers.
Our journey goes forward. In the state of our union history.
Three years ago, we measured candidate Obama by his hopeful promises and his slogans. Today, President Obama has amassed an actual record of debt, decline, and disappointment. I'd use the State of the Union to lay out an agenda that will get our country back on track and get our fiscal house in order. We need to nominate someone who is an experienced leader, who has the qualities of leadership, the character, the judgment, the seriousness, the sobriety, the capacity demonstrated time and time again as a leader to help guide our party at a critical time and make sure that we hold on to the House, that we capture the Senate, and that we get back the White House and restore to America what is rightfully ours, a great nation, united, free, and prosperous for our kids and for their kids. Thank you so very much.
There's Dr. Oz, there's Dr. Phil, there's Dr. Drew, there's Dr. Joy Brown. It seems like everybody's got an opinion, but I'm going to leave it to the real professionals. Call up at 347-308-8701 to give me your take. It's my problem, you deal with it. Right here on Therapy Thursdays on Reese on the Radio, on blogtalkradio.com, weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
a boy to do.
President Barack Obama named himself one of the country's four best presidents. Better than George Washington, John F. Kennedy, and even Ronald Reagan. But Mr. President was just being modest. He's in fact America's best president at piling on debt. So good that he has managed to pile on nearly as much debt as all the previous presidents combined. All he needed was just 4 years to outspend 220 years of history. We can't afford four more years of America's best president.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
Come on, players, stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
Right here live on Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to bring the guys back in. Make sure that they're ready for this ridiculous tribute. I'm going to warn you, I ain't happy about this.
We had fun. We were having a great conversation.
I had to cut you off. You can continue with your conversation later. We got a damn show to do.
Oh, okay.
At least another 13 minutes worth. Okay, I broke it down
to 2 minutes and 31 seconds.
You're the one that's so wrapped up in doing this tribute. I got to be honest with you, I am not a fan of this broad.
Wow, Aunt Una from Altoona?
She's from Boston, isn't she?
On Urkel, on Family Matters.
Who the heck is that?
That's Steve Urkel's aunt. From Altoona.
Donna Summer?
Yes.
I didn't know that. I didn't watch that show.
I'm surprised. I thought that's where you got a lot of your inspiration from.
Well, the only thing that I can honestly say, and I'll let all of you get an opportunity to say something nice about this woman, but this was the only song that I thought was even worth mentioning. So give me a second here, JC. I thought it was the only song that worth mentioning because it's near and dear to my heart. Because she's talking about a medium that I love more than anything. So Donna Summer, 63, died of cancer, same age as my mama. In Florida, they say she died. I got to give her props. I'll give her her props.
Never.
Psych.
I ain't playing that garbage.
Whatever.
I could just imagine you over there. I could imagine you over there, peace sign stroking your eyes and bobbing your head back and forth.
No, I don't like this woman.
Why?
I don't care. I wasn't a fan.
You're about the only person that wasn't a fan.
I don't care whether or not I was the only person. Mike, come on. Were you a fan?
You know, I kind of grew up on the tail end of disco, so by the time I got old enough to like music, you know, it was in the disco sucks era. But you can't take anything away from those disco artists, man. Donna Summer, part of my language, she was a badass bitch. That woman could sing her ass off. Not my kind of music, man. But if anybody can stand up and say that Donna Summer or ABBA or the Bee Gees suck, then they just don't get it. Those
they
people
don't,
really.
Didn't
really
anybody you sing
really
when they were that high for like a decade? You gotta give them props.
Okay,
yeah,
well,
give
them props,
man.
I'm not saying that I hated disco music. But Donna Summer didn't speak to me. She sang to broads.
Listen, what about that one song, man? Streetwalker's Anthem.
Yeah, she
How about Hot Stuff, man? Hot Stuff. You ever hear Joe Rogan talk about Donna Summer's Hot Stuff? Dude, she's just a horny bitch wanting to get some. That's a sexy-ass song.
And she was willing to sell it to you, too.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
she worked hard for the money.
1970s, I might have paid her. Of course, I'd have been eight.
He said the 1970s, I'd have paid her. Mary, Mary, why you bugging has finally joined us. So you were you a Donna Summer fan, Mary?
Yeah.
Without
really?
Question. I'm sure she was.
What was your favorite song? Bad Girls?
No, the song you just played.
On the radio?
Yeah.
I have to admit, it is the most, what I like about that song, the radio, it is one of those songs where you hear it, it's very dramatic, very slow, and then it goes into that groove.
Yep.
That's what I enjoy about it. It's a great groove.
It's one of the
she
best
mastered, but all of us, a lot of us, her major hits was that way.
Yeah, this is true. I will give her that. Last Dance, I'm not feeling.
What?
I'm not feeling it.
I like the Last Dance.
I'm not feeling it.
Talk about a song that defined a generation.
Don't go
on.
Yeah, you can try that one. That wasn't one of my favorites.
Are you crazy?
Can I get my tribute out of the way so we can close it out talking?
Okay, you get your tribute out of the way.
Okay.
You got a song to play?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, I figured you'd find one. Go ahead. What song?
Last chance for love.
No, there's two pieces to this tribute, though.
Yes, it's my last chance for romance tonight. I need you.
Why'd you play this song?
the late great Chuck Brown.
I never even knew what
you got to give a lot just to get what you need sometimes, y'all.
No, you heard this song before you went down in that area.
I'm like, what is that? I listened to it. I'm like, what the fuck is this hip hop in?
Yep. I feel like busting loose.
I feel like cutting off mics. I feel like cutting off mics.
You would. That was my homage to the late great Chuck Brown, the father of go-go.
You could have at least picked what he did with his
group
or whatever. You could have doing the butt.
Yeah, thank you for that.
That was later generations, but long before I ever learned what go-go was, I like Bustin' Loose. It was a major hit back in that time.
Yes, it was. It was a big hit. But
a lot of people mistaken that particular track as being recorded by Rick James.
Yeah, well, let's ask our resident white guy, our friendly neighborhood correspondent, Mike from Florida. Do you know anything about this Chuck Brown guy?
You know, I think I heard that song, but yeah, Washington D.C. Go Go is a little obscure for me, man.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
And I'm not exactly your average, you know, Caucasian dude. I like Parliament Funkadelic. Okay. You know, there's a little, you know, chocolate chips in my ice cream, but I don't know Washington Go Go at all.
You better watch out, Mike.
You know, I have seen George Clinton in concert. Okay. And I don't know nothing about Washington, D.C.
Go-Go. Mary's got a case of Oreos in her ice cream, too.
Boo, I don't have no chocolate chips, no Oreos, no, and my ice cream is chocolate.
She's a sister.
Oh, you guys are a mess today. So, okay, you got your little homage to both of them. And, you know, again, Donna Summer, no one would have ever thought. I did not know she had cancer.
I didn't know.
I'm surprised that you didn't know that she was Aunt Una from Altoona.
Listen to me. And, first of all, I didn't watch the show. But this woman just performed in Copenhagen for when Barack Obama received his Nobel Peace Prize. She performed at the concert.
Keith Richards lives on.
Maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
You can't kill Keith, man. Keith is 75 and still playing. The guy's not dead.
Right, Keith Richards, who's done every drug and every, you know, insane thing imaginable. This guy, you can't kill him. Is Donna Summer
he fell out of a coconut tree 4 years ago and broke his head and didn't die.
I remember that.
And then snorted his dead dad.
Yeah,
he's still
did too.
That's right, Keith Richards. Keith Richards reveals that he sniffed
his dead father's
ashes. That's probably what.
Yeah,
Keith
then he took it
fun.
Back. Then he took the chicken back.
I think he's an X-Man. I want some Keith Richards blood transfusion. That dude's got Wolverine regenerative powers.
I'm sorry, Angelo Jolie didn't marry him.
Richards is an X-Men. That's insanity. You're probably right. Oh man, Mike, thank you, man, for joining us today. Man, I appreciate it, man. You are a welcome anytime you like, man. I appreciate it.
And I have my new title, the friendly neighborhood Caucasian.
That's exactly. That's right. Friendly neighborhood white guy. I appreciate it, Mike. You know we love you, man.
I love you too, guys. All right. Y'all have a good night, yeah?
Yep.
All right. Man, you too.
Later, folks.
We'll get out of here, man. And all right, JC, play your last dance so we can get out of here with Donna Summer. Go on. For Mary, why you bugging? Friendly neighborhood white man, Mike from Florida. Kool-Aid man, James Montgomery, and JC the producer. I'm Reese on the radio. We love you. Tomorrow, Friday. Maybe we'll play a medley for Donna Summer for Friday Night Dance.
Nah, we're done with her today.
Yeah, that's the last dance.
We'll see you tomorrow, man. Goodbye.
Tonight.
get what you need sometimes.